KPCA LP, Petaluma, California. Good morning and welcome to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, co-hosting as usual with my co-hosts and friends, Janice Keeter-Thompson and Jason Davies. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you again. Happy Friday.
Another Friday.
Another Friday. Another Friday past the 4th of July, where we weren't supposed to have fireworks.
Yeah. It was loud.
How did that work in your neighborhoods?
Well, for me, we had, it was interesting. It was pretty quiet. And then there were a couple parties that were going on. Didn't sound like they were doing much social distancing. But in addition to that, they were lighting off fireworks. It was weird, though. I mean, it's like by the time we were getting annoyed and we're going to call somebody, then it stopped. And then so we didn't end up calling. And it's very hard to pinpoint as well exactly where they were coming from. So yeah, it's a tricky one to enforce that stuff. But I think, frankly, this is the first time all fireworks have been banned in Petaluma, except for like the community fireworks show that also didn't happen this year because of social distancing. But yeah, private firework use is banned, but this is the first year. So I'm expecting that compliance will probably improve over time, hopefully. Yeah. How was it for you, Janice?
How was Coco, her first?
That's Coco's second, and she did fine, and there were fireworks, and there was a lot of fireworks by my area. They were pretty loud.
Yeah.
But the dog was fine.
Yeah, those big M80s and M100s that,
Well, imagine, too, if you're suffering from post-traumatic shock, having come back from serving in a war or something like that, it must not be very settling.
Dogs were traumatized by it.
No, but no fires, fortunately. I heard in Sonoma County there were a few small ones, but I didn't hear that there were any in Petaluma, so that's good news at least.
Yeah. And then we were talking before the show about the latest results of the COVID outbreak.
Yeah, so
very
it's
disturbing.
It's sounding like what a lot of us thought would happen is going to happen. We're going to get some official notice, but it's sounding like we're going to have to start reversing some of the reopening. Probably dining in is probably not going to be a thing. The social distancing is going to have to get stepped up. Because, yeah, today, actually today the growth wasn't as big, but over the weekend I think it went up like 7%. Today it's a 2% growth over the previous day. Yeah. We have 1,519 cases. There's been a couple more deaths. So it's definitely not going in the right direction. We knew some of this would happen, of course.
We need to listen to the scientists because that's who knows better. Not the sheriff, not the police officers, not city halls. We need to listen to the science, and they're not doing it. And it's not good for our community. And I'm very concerned with if we don't get another stimulus package from the Senate, that the economy is really going to take a bigger dump than it already has, and it'll be permanent for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
And so we have some, you know, big issues coming up, and elected officials are putting our lives in danger because COVID is an airborne, and they don't even know how dangerous of an airborne it is.
Yeah, but obviously, regardless of what leadership is doing or lack of leadership, it's incumbent upon us as individuals to continue to socially distance, wear masks, wash hands, do all that stuff. It's super important. And of course, when you're talking about financial considerations, we have a big tax measure that we're working on locally.
They want to do a 1%, and I'm just not sure where I'm at with the taxing at this point.
We'll see. Money. It's hard to get taxes raised when people are bleeding.
Even our mayor, Mayor Barrett, has stated that that's just going to be a drop in the bucket. And I was pleased to hear her say, quote, we still should be looking at reexamining our cannabis law.
I did see that. I'm actually really surprised that more council members aren't pushing for that because, you know, that could be a you know good amount of additional revenue for the city.
You think?
It's currently just being lost. It's just going outside the county. Well, I guess with the exception of the delivery service, there's some tax coming in for that. And there was a council meeting on Monday. Janice, did you happen to watch that? I saw some of it online.
I did.
This was a resolution regarding police reform. And in the end, they've delayed voting on that because they responded to the fact that they didn't have enough feedback from people of color in our community. Is that in a nutshell describe
that it? That is it in a nutshell.
And then the other thing that was a good thing is the resolution regarding the art in Lakehorns Park, which has been given protected status now. So this is right. The Black Lives Matter art that's up there. And on that note, we have some guests we want
to
introduce.
We do have some guests today to speak more on that subject. And I would like to introduce Ariel Bussey and Gabby Bussey, community activists. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
They are also joined by their mother, Tricia Allman, who is chair of the Sonoma County Commission on the Status of Women. Good morning, Trish.
Good morning.
The sanctioning of the art in Leghorn Park was a big thing, although it was noted in the newspaper, the Argus Courier, that the city attorney has said that that's kind of an open lot now that anyone can post up there. So has anybody been down to the park lately to see if anything's been disturbed?
I have not been there lately. I'm in contact with a couple of people who helped kind of organize this whole thing and everything. The last picture I saw, there's tons of art up there, and it looks beautiful, but I haven't seen anything recently. I don't know if anything's been taken down again. So.
Yeah. Okay, so did you participate in some of the hanging of that art?
Unfortunately, no. I was at work
okay.
when it happens.
But you are involved in other art projects around town, I understand.
I don't know about other art projects.
Well, there was the decoration of the police department last week.
The Independence from White Supremacy protest last weekend, we just got to hang up our signs that we made at the police department, but that was about
okay,
it.
And you did that on July 4th, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And then, as I understand it, you also did a march that day?
Yeah. Yep, a march to the Petaluma Police Department and then to City Hall.
Okay. About how many participants did you have?
I'm really bad at estimating numbers, but it looked to be about the same crowd size as when I've gone to other ones. So I'd estimate between 200 and 300.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
What was it like going to school as a person of color in Petaluma? It's pretty white. I mean, I just want to get down to the real issues here. And I think Black Lives Matter has opened this conversation up.
Yeah, I mean, as a black queer woman growing up here, definitely in elementary school, I remember coming home crying for being made fun of for the size of my lips or the size of my nose or my skin color. Mm. I've definitely been called the N-word, you know, in elementary school or junior high and high school. I know people that have in high school, and mind you, this is like 2004, so nothing's really changed in that amount of time, I feel like, from then until now. You know, getting made fun of for my hair, definitely, which I don't have right now. Not like anyone can see me really that's listening to this. But yeah, having natural hair has always been something, you know, I was almost ashamed of. I used to straighten my hair up until I was probably in like 10th or 11th grade, you know, all through high school and everything like that. And then I learned to love it. You know, and that's what I can speak on for me, myself, growing up here, what I went through. I can't turn it over to Gabby.
What was it like for you, Gabby?
I can't say that during K through 12, I personally experienced any explicit racism, but there's definitely a lot of microaggressions. Mm-hmm. I've definitely seen my classmates referred to as the N-word. Whenever it was Cinco de Mayo at Casa Grande, a lot of white students would come around parading with the American flag. you can really feel the white supremacy in the air. So I think a lot of it is more microaggressions that I've experienced than just overt racism, which is just as bad.
Can you give us an example of a microaggression for some of the listeners who might not be familiar with that term?
Let's see here. I mean, like, there's things like, I definitely heard, oh, you know, you're pretty for a black girl.
Ugh.
Like, we come in every single, like, we range from super, super light, like, almost white, you know, there's black people with albinism, to super, super dark. Like, we're every shade of the rainbow, you know? Oh, yeah, you have nice hair. You have good hair. Oh, well, you know, you have lighter skin, so you're, you know, you're luckier. Things like that. That doesn't feel good to hear that.
No. Yeah.
Well, I just want to say, in the 1960s at Bernard Eldridge, I used to be called the Christ killer because I was Jewish. And so racism is deep, except when you're white, it's a lot different. And when you have, you know, color skin. And I have two nieces who are biracial. I've talked about them on this show before. And they're experiencing their blackness kind of for the first time. Mm-hmm. And they are part of an evangelical world with her grandparents in Sacramento. And they're experiencing something. They're opening up their lives. But they had a school that had a lot of black students, unlike Petaluma, which would be a completely different experience than you. And so now they're kind of learning. And I just sent them some books. And, you know, they financially, they're not in great finances. They, you know, they're going to school. I'm proud of them. But it's interesting having conversations with them and realizing that they're just experiencing their blackness for the first time.
Yeah, I would have to say, I mean, I don't know if you guys know the app Tumblr, but me and my sister kind of make a joke that, like, we got our master's in African-American studies and politics because of Tumblr University. I tell people all the time, I'm 30 now, I'll be 31 in December, but I didn't learn to love being black until I was 28. That was 2.5 years ago. And that's just crazy to me, you know? No one should have to grow up and think they're less than color their skin.
Right, right.
Now, you went to the University of California, Irvine. Is that correct?
I do.
Are you still going?
Okay.
I graduated, but I'm at Long Beach State now.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you were part of the Black Student Union when you were there. Is that correct?
Kind of. I rarely attended meetings, but I met a lot of people.
What was that like?
Well, Irvine is kind of like Petaluma in that it's very white. I think the black student population was less than 3%, which is higher than, like, more than three times higher than the amount of black people in Petaluma. But it was nice being able to have a black community, because in Petaluma, I never had black friends growing up. I was usually the only black person in my class. Yeah, it was very important for my identity.
And that's part of the problem, I think, for some people. There aren't a lot of people of color in the community, and they're not exposed, and some people fear what they don't know. They fear they just choose to be afraid of what they're not familiar with.
The council meeting last night, or Monday, this man opposing the art.
Oh, I couldn't believe that guy.
I mean, you know, he starts off, you know, well, you know, he's opposing the art, but a racist always says, I'm not a racist.
Right.
And yet, I mean, they're a racist. Even to say that comment, they're a racist.
You have to start your sentence with that. That's
how it started.
There's usually a but. I'm not a racist, but. Okay, so you are a racist. no one, it's interesting. No one who's racist wants to be called a racist. And maybe that's slightly good, because they know that it's not a good thing, that there's still a social taboo with it, but it's not a good thing.
You know, I've been having conversations with people on, do we think we're racist? You know, having these real true conversations. Yeah. And I've learned a lot about people that I know that are very liberal, and yet they were raised in very racist families. You know, back east, you would call the Puerto Ricans had a name. Everybody had a name in the tenement buildings that people lived in. And so I've been having a lot of these conversations, and I had one with my cousins, a few of my cousins, and we were all raised a little bit different, but there was a word that we would always hear growing up, and it was Schwarze. And in my house, we never used that word, nor were we allowed to, nor was my cousin. And I remember that so vividly, and this is the conversations that we're now having with people that I know, and we're all questioning our how we were raised, what the words that we heard and what those words really did mean, because they certainly didn't, weren't positive. And I see these people sitting around the table visiting my parents, because that's what people used to do. You never had to have an appointment to go visit somebody. You just have groups of people and you'd hear, you know, people speaking in different languages and these words. And it's just so vivid in our minds.
The N word was just not something that ever, that just wasn't a word we were ever able to use. It was, I mean, I just could never say it, never came to, I mean, sometimes we would hear some people say it, but I mean, that was just not a word our parents would utter. It wasn't something we heard. It was never normalized. And I think that's the big thing, is education starting young, because kids, you know, they're not racist by default. They learn it from their parents more typically.
Yeah.
So Tricia, what was it like for you raising a biracial family?
It is interesting to hear that how children aren't born that way. Ariel was probably about 3 and a half and at preschool. And at the time, Tillman had been the one to pick her up from preschool. And one day I showed up. And I'm standing there holding her hand, and this little boy comes right up to her and says, "Arielle, who's that? Who's that lady?" And she looks at him. She says, "It's my mom." And then he says, "Do you know your dad's black and your mom's white?" And she was totally perplexed, because she wasn't raised with color. Yeah. And I just looked at him and I said, "That's because she's special."
Oh, nice.
I feel like to just say something about that, though, it is important for people to say that you do see color, because, you know, well, now that I've grown up and stuff like that, at that age, I probably didn't realize. You know, I think it's really important to say to people, too, I've heard the term from people I know that say, "Oh, I don't see color." And it's important to reiterate that color exists, and you need to see it as much, you know. Mm-hmm. We are technically all one race. There's just differentiations in our melanin. But it exists, and people are oppressed because of it. And I just think that's something that I like to always share with people. Like, if you don't see color, then you're part of the problem too.
Yes.
And not saying that against you, Mom, but I'm just saying in general.
Yeah.
Well, your mom's got a lot of issues.
Don't we all?
We all have issues.
No, and the other thing is, I remember so well, I think it was second grade, and Aria was ripping her hair out. Mm-hmm. And we did, you know, it wasn't a medical condition. We did what we could. And I remember going in the bathroom and crying, and she's slipping a note under the bathroom door. And it says, "Mom, I just want my hair straight like yours." And I'm in there going, "I want mine curly like yours."
Yeah, I mean, people get permanence. Right.
Yeah. Well, I did that for 18 years. I'm over that. But
didn't we all?
But at that time, I don't know, Ariel. I don't know if that was related to how you were being treated, or you just really wanted straight hair like mine.
No, I wanted straight hair because I did not like my hair. But I thought of another time too, when you took me to the doctor for something, and I remember the doctor asking, "Oh, well, what's your relationship to her?" And you got mad. You're like, "That's my daughter."
Oh, yeah. Right. It's happened before. Yeah,
I'm gonna bet 90% of us don't like our hair and want exactly the opposite of what we have. So,
yes,
I just always want curly hair myself.
I just want hair.
And you know, for me, this has been an awakening. I, unfortunately, at my age, to realize what I was a failure to them. Mm. I think I kind of looked to Tillman to be the one to educate them on their history and their background, and he didn't. Whereas I should have paid attention to that. I am now, which is a little late. I should have paid attention to that and educated myself more. I mean, I only had this much knowledge, whereas Tillman had that much knowledge and personal experience. Mm.
And so now, I mean, I'm getting, I have things go through my mind, and I actually primarily throw them at Ariel going, I'm feeling this way. I don't like what I see, or I don't like what I hear. I do like it. And I said, what's your opinion? Because the way I feel, I realize might not be her perception. And I need to hear that other perception. It, you know, for instance, all the businesses that are coming out with these statements about Black Lives Matter. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, this is well and good, but they're just words. What are you doing? And that's why I said, am I wrong feeling that way, that they're saying these words and I don't like that they're just saying words?
No,
and her words were, well, what are they doing? And that's exactly how I felt. So it felt good that I was, you know, kind of going the same line that she was. But yeah, I'm really, I'm going through regret right now at, you know, raising kids and where you fell through the cracks.
I don't think you have to have biracial children to feel that way. I think this is a parent.
Well, yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's a completely different layer, though. I mean, yeah. You've added quite a few different layers on. And we just, growing up, we just did not learn Black history at all.
No.
We learned propaganda history is what we learned. And I go back and I think about history starting in grammar school through high school and even in college. Mm-hmm. It was just so much propaganda, and so much of our history was just put to the side. And these are frightening times. And I go back to, you know, when, you know, Lewis was going over the bridge and what was happening during the 60s. And then I look at today thinking that there's going to be change. And I'm really worried that the change might not happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not convinced that it's going to happen. At first I thought it would, and I'm losing hope. And I think we have to have more of these conversations to educate people. And that's why I sent books to my nieces, because they're not being supported by their family.
I was discussing this with someone too. I'm like, I remember in high school, I literally had to take an alternative history class to learn the stuff that I know now about Black history, you know, Mexican-American history, Mexican history, all of this stuff. I'm like, why do I have to take an alternative history class for something that's part of American history?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's been very whitewashed by white people.
Absolutely.
And if you go back to, you know, D.C. and you start listening to the tapes during tapes of senators and congress people speaking, I mean, we are a country of white racism.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, I'm finally realizing that at 65, but a lot of people don't see it, and they're fearful. And I know these people. That's what's scary.
Well, you probably heard in the news, this happened over the weekend, there was a couple in Martinez that took it upon themselves to paint over a city-sanctioned temporary art piece. It was the words Black Lives Matter painted yellow on the street. The weird thing was they were starting to paint it over, but they were painting within the lines, so it was still going to say Black Lives Matter. It was kind of silly, but they caught the people. And so I thought that was good in a few ways. First of all, there were people that were watching it while it was happening, and I don't know if you saw the videos of it, but they did speak up. One woman took the can of paint away from the woman who was painting it. They were Trump supporters. They happened to be these two people that were choosing to vandalize the sign. But now they've been caught, and they're facing prosecution now.
I want to go back to the meeting and our chief and you know, how he was speaking on Monday night. I mean, that division is very clear between the police and us, whether you're Black or white at this point. And things are not going to change until we get some police reform. So I think it's really good that we have a community group that's taking that discussion and bringing it to the public instead of the institution of city government.
I think it speaks volumes that the council members saw that and responded. It was a majority decision not to go forward as planned.
It was a unanimous decision.
It was a unanimous decision.
Well, they also agreed to allocate funds for a Black Lives Matter street mural here in Petaluma, which I thought was good.
I think that's good.
I'd love to see you, Ariel, and Gabby apply to be part of that art.
Probably will be. Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Do you know where they're going to put it? Any ideas? Would it be like on Washington, East Washington, or something? Or
they were going to leave that. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say. I mean, I love the sentiment of the murals, but we want to see like action.
No, I absolutely agree.
Like, describe for us what you feel is a very strong action.
I mean, defunding the police, absolutely, reallocating funds to mental health care and education so that the police can actually do the job that they're assigned for and not have to worry about things that they have absolutely no training from. Like, I have more training in my massage therapy program than a police officer gets. Yeah, at least $500. So if they can just focus on what they need to do and not other things.
Ariel and Gabby, what's your experience with the police department driving or walking down the street, even not with the police department, just walking down streets in Petaluma? And what are your friends' experiences? Black friends, obviously. I've talked to people who have been pulled over by the police or targeted by the police is basically what I'm going. Do you ever feel like you've been targeted?
I can only think of one time when I was about 13 or 14, I think, and I was with a group of three other girls that were my friends who were white, and we did get stopped by a Petaluma police officer who said that I fit the description of a missing child. I don't know. It was right after school. I'd come home, and then I left, and I was like, no. He didn't give me any what the description was, anything like this, and instead of, you know, asking, you know, are you okay, anything like that, he was harassing me. He was very accusatory, and he, like, I had done something wrong. I'm like, if I was that missing child, though, why would I be like, yeah, that's me? You know, as a child, you think you look to police officers to help you, but clearly that's not the case sometimes. And I think that's kind of the only experience I've ever had with Petaluma PD specifically, but I mean, it scares me just to go anywhere just as a black person, I guess.
Well, I was stating last week that my daughter lives with a friend, Diego, and he's has very dark skin. He's from South America. Actually, he was born in this country, but his family's from South America, so he has darker skin. He was driving his truck, and he had two go-karts in the back because he does karting. That's his job and or his business, and a police officer pulled him over and looked at the carts and said, oh, we had a, he, they were looking for a stolen golf cart. Well, he knew it wasn't a stolen golf cart. And then another time he was pulled over and the officer asked him for his green card. And he has a, you know, bachelor's degree from Maryland, you know, university. And so he handed the officer his passport. And so what I know of people that have been pulled over by the police, they had actually a routine of what they would do. One would start recording. And then all of a sudden the taillight that really wasn't out, the officer would say, oh, your taillight's out, just get it fixed. But but if it wasn't for those actions, it would have gone to another level. And my daughter's roommate, Diego, has been pulled over at least 4 times in Petaluma. And they were all racial.
And that's the biggest thing, too. That's for me, too. Like, I do have lighter skin, and colorism exists. Darker people are punished a lot more than lighter skin, black people or people of color. So, but I mean, for me, definitely, I'm like, if I ever get pulled over again, because it's been, I mean, the last time I think I was for a speeding ticket years and years ago, but I'm like, I'm tell them I'm going to be recording. I'm going to let them know when I'm reaching because I don't want to get shot.
Their father has had more issues, and one of them actually was several years ago after a downtown Petaluma incident, and he was with a Hispanic. They were both acting as PCA members. They had video recorder, video machines with them and all that, and they were interviewing people or whatever, and two cops stopped them, and I was passing through in the car and waved, thinking nothing of it when I saw the cops talking to them, but they were asking for their ID and wouldn't say why. But ultimately, it was assumed they had stolen equipment. And basically, and Tillman just kept saying, why are you asking us this? They were in the Helen Putnam Plaza. And he said, you know, please call the police chief, please call the police chief. And finally they did, because the police chief at that time was actually on the PCA board. And he confirms that they were PCA members, but they were getting hit for having stolen equipment.
That's crazy.
Well, I think the problem is that we keep hearing from our police that we don't have a problem in Petaluma.
Yeah. So, well, that's one of the reasons we're wanting to reach out to the community to find out, you know, what are the experiences people are having. I saw a recent article, was pretty frightening, actually. The FBI has been investigating infiltration of white supremacists into law enforcement. So there's been an active effort by white supremacists to actually become police officers. And as it is, the police, you know, probably know the history of the slave patrol and things like that. There's part of that in the history of law enforcement to begin with. But to think that we actually have white supremacists signing up to be in law enforcement so they can ostensibly carry out their acts of racism, that's extremely disturbing. And apparently, when Trump got in, a lot of the FBI work on this was ignored. That's something that needs to
be. Well, it seems like when the evangelicals really came forward, that a lot of evangelicals were going into the law enforcement, and there's prayers in, you know, in departments. And I've had an issue with religion and police for at least the last 20 years. And I don't think it's getting any better, but I think it might be slightly being exposed.
I have to share, talking about white supremacy, when the protests this last weekend, I actually texted Ari and Gabby, who were elsewhere in the crowd, and I said, there's a suspicious character floating back here, and I was at the back at Walnut Park just watching him. And at some point, I think he realized I was just constantly watching him, because he just didn't seem like a participant. He felt like he fit the picture of easily being a white supremacist. But he also was potentially an undercover cop. So at some point he stopped moving, and he was just 10, 12 feet off of me. And I just watched him throughout the parade. And then Kenyatta Todd, who spoke at City Hall, she came off. And I was telling him about this guy that I kept seeing. And she admitted, when she came off the, I'll call it the stage, for lack of a better term, after she spoke at City Hall, she said, I know exactly who you're talking about. He was off right in front of me. I said,
I know exactly who you're talking about, too. He was talking to me and my friend Brittany while we were there, so I'm pretty sure it's the same person.
Yeah, and he was not chanting. He was nothing. He was just acting suspicious throughout the whole thing. But then at some point, I thought, okay, if he was a white supremacist, he probably would have done something. So I don't, maybe he was an undercover cop, but it was just he did not fit. He just didn't fit the crowd.
That's probably an undercover cop. It sounds more like it.
That's more like it, yeah.
Yeah, I would say so, too. Yeah. Yep. They usually have a certain look.
He had that look. It could have gone either direction, and he was plugged in the whole time. Plugged in.
Huh.
I would recommend that you all interview Kenyatta Todd. She has a history here in Petaluma with her son.
He's pretty cool.
Cindy, you would remember her from V-Day. She was one of the cast members. I can't remember which year. But she's lived here for quite a while. She still lives here. Her sons no longer live here, but she's had harassment from the police department and her sons as well.
Wow.
And that's why they don't want to live here anymore.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a town that's predominantly made up of white people and they say, oh yeah, there's no racism or the police are great. I mean, they're just talking from their own experience. And obviously if, if you're white, you're not going to have the same kind of experience. If there is racism or profiling or anything that's going on, you're not going to experience it. So I think it's very difficult for some people to get this, to understand. And that, again, that's why we need to hear more from our community.
They're the same people that say, I'm not a racist, but.
Yeah,
and they're everywhere.
The other thing that's really starting to bother me is this whole, like, blue lives matter, all lives matter. And it's like, of course. Yeah, of course, every life matters. But the point is that lives don't really matter until Black Lives Matter, because they're right. Currently the ones that are bearing the brunt of the racism. There are some people that will just argue that in it, and they claim they're not racist, but.
Well, I look at COVID though, Jason, you know, COVID, who's it affected the most? The poorer people.
Yeah.
And so you look at that in this country, how many people have died and how many people have come down with COVID. I mean, it's inequity. It's social injustice.
And how many of these people that refuse to wear masks and go into stores and yell about it? I mean, I have no idea if there's a correlation, but some of these may also be in the same camp as those that are white supremacists. It, they're at least putting themselves above everybody else, and that's healthy.
It's, I don't know. I'm just hoping that we're going to have some change and that we're going to actually see some change. And I'm, that's all we can really do at this point. I mean, I think you have to keep going out and protesting. You can't stop what's going on. And the second it stops, then everything just goes back to where it was. And I don't see it stopping this time. But there is a point where the pressure for people to continue protesting is difficult, especially if people have to go back to work. And, you know, how do you keep this movement going? You donate money to the right causes.
We have to keep talking about it.
Well, that's true.
Yep.
Well, I mean, it bothers me that St. Vincent's has a conversation with the president of the United States and brings a student in about bringing students back to school and why it is good. I mean, well, if we look at our community, it's been run by the Catholics forever. And it's just, when is it going to stop that everybody is actually heard instead of just the good old boys of this town? And then, you know, but over at Leghorn, there was a woman with her two children, white, and they moved to Petaluma about 10 years ago and are still stunned when they look around and see how white this town is. Because they were raised in Oakland. You know, kids that are raised in Oakland, and they walk around their town. They don't, they're not afraid. But in this town, you're just afraid of walking out your front door. I mean, I have a racist on this side of me. I've got one over on this side of me. They're all around us. And I'm stunned at my racist neighbors I've known for 40 years.
Well, and I think it's something that Dylan Chambers said. He was on our show a couple of weeks ago. And that is, you need to call people out on their behaviors like that. That's don't. You just can't turn away from it anymore and pretend you didn't hear it. You got to call them out.
No. Well, early on, I called my cousin a brown shirter, and I called my other cousin a racist. And we were raised together in Petaluma, and they won't talk to me anymore. They blocked me off Facebook. But the truth is, they are both brown shirters, which in World War II were the people, the Nazis that wore the brown uniforms. Yeah. And they're racist, and they don't know it.
Well, racist.
And we were raised together.
They're incredibly emboldened right now. It's almost getting normalized simply because we have a president who has been normalizing it, and that's a huge problem. Because a couple of things are happening. There's more video cameras, so we're becoming more aware with everybody with camera phones of these things that have just never stopped. Mm-hmm. They've been going on since the founding of the country.
I saw this morning on one of the networks was doing a live broadcast of some artists doing a street mural in front of Trump Towers this morning in New York City, a big Black Lives Matter, which I just thought was awesome.
He hates it. He calls Black Lives Matter, what are they? They're a hateful terrorist organization, I think he called them.
Has he already commented about the one in New York City?
That it's going to run the luxury of Fifth Avenue or something like that.
So you've been listening to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, co-hosting with Janice Cater-Thompson and Jason Davies. And our guests today have been Ariel Bussey and Gabrielle Bussey. Thank you, Ariel and Gabby, for being here. And also their mom, Trish Allman, who is the chair of the Sonoma County Commission on the Status of Women. Thank you also, Tricia. And we do hope that you'll consider coming back and talking to us another time. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us.
All right.
Black Lives Matter. Justice for Brianna, justice for Vanessa. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.